This is Jones Financial Talk with Nick Jones from Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. When a part of your financial strategy is out of tune, your long-term goals, your retirement savings, and your legacy can all suffer. Nick provides his clients and prospects with the information they need regarding Social Security, retirement income planning, wealth management, and much more. Listen in as we address your financial concerns and provide helpful solutions to put you on the path to achieving your retirement goals. And now, here is Jones Financial Talk with your host, Nick Jones.
Well, hello, listeners. Welcome back to Jones Financial Talk. This is Nick Jones from Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. Listeners, as always, if you like more information about what you hear on our fine show today, you can find that information in a couple of different ways. You can either just give us a call at 541-500-4321, or you can go to our website at jonesfinancialtalk.com. I love the website. We've redesigned it. There's lots of great information on there. There's a media page that shows all the past previous radio shows that we have done. You can click on those and listen to them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and even Amazon Music. And as always, if you have any specific questions, we'd love to hear from you. That's how we get lots of great content for the shows that we have to share with you on a weekly basis. But before we talk about our topic of the day, let me introduce my co-host, Mr. Tony Shore. How you doing, my friend?
Well, I've been great. I've been really good, in fact, because my Vikings are doing great.
They have had a good season so far, Tony.
I'm excited about that. Yeah, 5-0 so far as of the recording of the show. So
pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is only 2 5-0 teams, the Chiefs and the Vikings.
Ooh, so that would be a tough matchup right there.
It would be. So other than that, I've been really good. I just enjoying the fall weather. How about you? What have you been up to, Nick?
Things have been great. Yeah, the market has been good. You know, we're going into the fall season here. Lots of topics that have continuously come up, though, because of the election that's on the horizon. You know, and yeah. a lot of those topics typically have to do with something very specific in a financial portfolio or financial plan that you should be talking with your advisor about. And I kind of earmarked today, Tony, to talk about something that's very, very important for many people, which is enhanced planning. Yeah. And there's so many different things involved with enhanced planning. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit about the main terminology and tools that you want to consider for enhanced planning, and then move into tax planning and how that is related to things that you should be planning for in your estate. And then maybe finally talk about some financial planning strategies for effective enhanced planning and estate planning, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a lot. I don't know if we're going to fit all that into today's show, but over the next couple of weeks, we'll probably maybe spread that out. But that's good. And I think it's great that we're talking about this. But to start, let's explain to people what enhanced planning is. I gather, Nick, that enhanced planning encompasses all that. But the main part of enhanced planning is people may have heard it referred to as estate planning is a big part of what you call enhanced planning.
It sure is. So enhanced planning is kind of all the things that you would consider in an estate plan. And, you know, back in the day, it was just the legal documents that most people think about,
right?
You know, and
right.
So
a will
or a trust. And we're going to talk about all the little intricacies of those and the documents that you need. But enhanced planning doesn't only include that. It includes the planning that goes into the current things that you need to look through when you're looking at your specific estate. And it can come from a tax planning standpoint. It can come from a financial planning, maybe some investment planning tools that you would want to use so that you implement it all together. And it's not just as easy as sitting down with an attorney and drafting a document and then boom, you're done. It's you have to implement all those things. And so that's the most important part, Tony.
Yeah. And I think things have changed and people realize now with the way everything works with inheritances and taxes and kids and trusts, you need more than just a will. It's about more than that. There are beneficiary designations. There are wills. There are other documents. So what are some of the key legal documents that need to be a part of your enhanced planning?
Yep. And just to clarify, you're exactly correct. people often think, well, I'll just get a will or a trust or one or the other. And, you know, usually when you get a trust, it actually includes a will and last testament. So let's walk through some of those things. So the main piece of the puzzle that helps transfer and distribute your assets after you pass away is called your last will and testament. And that basically indicates exactly what you wish and how you want to distribute your assets when you pass away. Okay. It allows a person to appoint a legal and financial guardian for their children if that's necessary. And in most situations, a will is in a situation where you will probably not be able to avoid probate. Now, there are some specific states and situations where you can avoid probate with a will, but in most cases, that's not going to happen. And so, you know, a lot of people think about this is kind of the most basic thing that you would want to work with an attorney with or for, I should say, because going through the probate process without a will is just going to be so time consuming and expensive. And if you die without a will, which is called intestate, state law is going to determine exactly how your assets are going to be distributed. And as you can imagine, that is usually not beneficial for people.
No, you have to have the will, and that is that those are the instructions to the court and the state is what, you know, where your property goes. It's not just, hey, to help your kids know who's getting what. It's a legal document that everyone should have. And boy, if you die intestate, like you said, that's not good. And then it's going to really take a long time. And if all you have is a will, it's got to go through probate. Most wills, like you say, have to go through probate, but you can avoid some of that. We'll get into that later. You know, that's where trusts come in and other things, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting for me, you know, in my business, one of the things that people bring up often in the conversation is estate planning, because maybe they had a parent or a family member that passed away that's older than them and didn't have a trust or didn't have a will properly structured. And so they have seen firsthand how detrimental that can be and how difficult it can be to go through the probate process, right? And so the last will and testament is the main thing that you would want to have to make sure everything's organized correctly. Now, not to confuse people, but the living will expresses your preferences for medical treatment if you become incapacitated. And this is going to include things like life support, pain management, and organ donations. Okay. But that's when you're living. Okay. Your last will and testament is used to transfer your assets when you pass.
Okay. So like if you're married and you're going to be parents, anyone who's going to be a parent, you want a living will in case something should happen to you and you have minor children. That's where a living will would help, right? Like who's going to take care of the kids, that type of thing.
Yeah. And so all of that should be organized and can be dictated in that last will and testament as well, if something were to happen.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And the living will is like for things like if I go into the hospital then and I'm incapacitated, that I say, if I can't make my own decisions, here's what I want to have happen. Don't keep me on life support. Here's who can make decisions if I'm incapacitated and that, like in a coma, right? Is that right?
That's exactly correct. And then a lot of people also confuse this with a medical power of attorney. And so let's talk about those. There are two different types of durable powers of attorney. And this is for when you are still living. Okay. Right. So the first is the medical or healthcare power of attorney. And this allows the person that you appoint to communicate with your doctors and make healthcare decisions for you when you're unable to do it for yourself. Okay. So that's a very, very important part, especially at the end of life when you want somebody to assist you there. And then similar, but different, the durable financial power of attorney is what allows the person that you appoint to act on your behalf if you lose mental capacity. And so this may include things like managing your assets, paying your bills, you know, buying and selling real estate, paying your taxes, things like that. And once again, that document is used, you know, specifically when you're still living, right? But you don't have the ability to do all those things for yourself.
Yeah. I had to do that with my parents, and my mom, fortunately, we had that done because my mom is now in long-term care with a lot of, she's starting to have some Lewy bodies dementia issues with her also, Parkinson's, I should say. And my dad is having issues now too, but I have financial power of attorney, so I can go to the bank and help him with these things. And that's been very helpful.
Yep. Yep. It sure is. And can be for sure. And, you know, maybe I should just take a moment here to step back and let people know, you know, I am definitely not an attorney, but I just know enough about a lot of these specific terms and documents that you would need, because I work with so many clients that have them, but we partner with many local attorneys and different organizations to help our clients organize this in the manner that they need. And so then, Tony, the next main document and topic that people ask us about is a trust, right? And a trust is what basically defines how a person's asset should be managed during their lifetime or after their death. Okay. And assets that are in a trust avoid probate. That's one of the main goals and great things about a trust. And they also remain private. So maybe it would be helpful also to explain to our listeners, for those who do not know, you know, what the different terms are inside of a trust. Okay. And so you have the grantor or the trustor. That's the person that creates the trust. And then you have the trustee or the successor trustee, and those are the people that manage the trust. And then you've got the beneficiary. The beneficiary is the person that's going to benefit from the trust.
Yeah, for sure. And so a trust is so important. And a lot of people think, oh, this estate planning and trusts, this is for the uber wealthy. It really isn't. It's for everybody. Everybody has a legacy. Everybody has something that they need to plan for in case of their passing. And so we should all be doing this planning. And if you've got a 401k, IRA, investments, retirement savings, you especially, then it becomes more important. The more you have, obviously, the more important all of this becomes, but it is important regardless, well, right?
And it is somewhat dependent on the assets that you have and how things are structured, right? Because you can put a beneficiary, which we'll talk about later, on some of these accounts so that you don't have to have a trust, and it will not go through probate. But there are assets, and from time to time, these things change with tax law and with state law to determine what is beneficial to be in a trust and not. So the biggest one also that you didn't mention that I would mention to listeners is their primary residence or any property. Okay. Because a property that is not in the name of the trust is going to go through probate. And that sometimes is the biggest hiccup for the person that's trying to settle their parents or their relatives' estate, right? If the property is in the person's name, or if it hadn't been changed because the title has been at the county for years and years and years, it makes it a very difficult process and can. So what I would say is, you know, there's no boilerplate answer to this, but typically what I have seen when I have worked with lawyers, anybody with assets, say above $750,000 or property, like real property or things that are of very, very good value that you cannot specifically just dictate to give to somebody, those are the things that are going to trigger when they're going to recommend that you should probably utilize a trust. And then the other biggest thing that we're going to touch later on is the estate tax planning situations. And so for those of you that are here in Oregon, the estate tax issues that we have from a taxation standpoint in Oregon start at $1 million of total assets. And so if you have more than $1 million in assets, somebody in your estate is going to pay some taxes to the state of Oregon. And so there's lots of planning tools that you should put into effect to avoid that or to lessen the impact of what that taxation is going to do.
Yeah. And if your family owns property or a home, you can hit $1 million pretty quick. I mean, people might think, oh, I'm not a millionaire. Well, guess what? That includes, you know, land, home, any assets you might have. And so, especially if the family owns a business or a farm, you know, things definitely like this, really that law, that state law, and that's a really low minimum that the state of Oregon has.
Yep.
Because a lot of states, it's really high. You know, you have to have tens of millions before the tax situation kicks in. In Minnesota, where I'm from, I think it's 3 million.
It is 3 million there. And you're one of the lower states, you know, similar to Oregon. You did mention a good thing there. So with businesses and LLCs and different corporations that people own, you know, transferring those assets into the trust eventually is something that is incredibly helpful so that they don't go through probate. And
right. You
can do that specifically with lots of different specific documents that lawyers can create, membership assignments and things like that. So all of those specific, you know, situations are very, very specific for each client. And that's what's going to determine if there's any additional documentation and things that they should have. But a lot of people ask me, from time to time, there's lots of different names of trusts, right? And there's lots of different meanings as well. The two most common are revocable and irrevocable. And so I thought I'd spend a little bit of time talking about those, Tony.
So those are the two main types of trusts.
Yes.
Revocable and irrevocable. I've heard of them. Tell us about what each of those are.
Okay, so a revocable trust means basically that it can be changed. Okay, so it's usually run by the person that set it up. So the grantor, right? If I create a trust for my wife and I'm the one who's running the actual trust while I'm still living. Okay, I have the ability to make changes to the trust. I can move assets that I own in and out of the trust. So that's very, very flexible and allows me to make changes whenever I want. The assets that are inside the trust can receive what's called a step up in basis, depending on certain situations as well.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a good thing. You definitely want that, especially if you have a business or a farm. These are important. What about, so that's a revocable trust. What about an irrevocable trust?
Okay. So there's lots of specific situations with irrevocable trusts, but the main thing there is that they cannot be changed. Okay. And there's lots of benefits to that, but there's also lots of restriction. So you cannot change things that are built there. The person that creates the irrevocable trust, for one, cannot be the person that runs the trust. Okay. It has to be somebody else that they put in line. The assets that you gift to the trust cannot be taken out. So if I decided to have an irrevocable trust and put my piece of property in it, I can't then take it out later. Okay. But some of the advantages, it removes in some situations the assets from your estate. Okay. Now there are specific laws around that, but this is a way that you have the ability to reduce estate taxes in some situations by using an irrevocable trust, by moving those assets into the irrevocable trust during your lifetime. And a lot of people have heard the term, you know, Medicaid spend down and how that works. And so when you're looking to protect yourself and your assets and get Medicaid help, in some situations, an irrevocable trust can be very helpful for that. It can also help those that have disabilities and how well they may be able to qualify for government benefits if they don't own those assets themselves. Okay. And then maybe finally, it does provide some asset protection from creditors and lawsuits inside that situation. But one of the main downfalls is typically you do not have the ability to have assets receive a step up in basis, okay? Because you've already given those away.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds like an irrevocable trust is a great thing. The advantages are great. The disadvantages are you have to, you know, you lose a little bit of control up front, but the results can be very effective in hanging on to your money or keeping those assets within your family. And again, if you have a business, that's probably a good thing, or a certain amount of money or property. That's very helpful. So those are the two main types of trusts, revocable and irrevocable. You mentioned earlier estate and gift tax exemptions.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. That sounds good to me. I like the word tax exempt. I want to be exempt from, I don't like talking about taxes, but being exempt from taxes sounds like a good thing, right?
So, yep, there are exemptions from estate taxes. And, you know, part of the reason why this conversation has kind of fallen by the wayside is because many years ago, the federal exemption was raised to a very, very high level. So today, this year, the federal exemption before you're going to pay any estate taxes is $13.6 million. Okay. But what I want people to understand is this is one of the things that politicians always have on the docket when they're thinking about tax revenue. Okay. So without legislative action, this exemption, not in 2025, but in 2026, is going to go back down to $5 million. Okay. And so a lot more people may be affected as a result of that. Right.
Yikes.
And yeah. So, and you have to realize today, if you think about a healthy 60-year-old or 65-year-old or 70-year-old that has $1 million in assets, right? If they don't spend that down during their lifetime, how much is that going to be worth when they're 90? It's going to get up there. It's going to be $3, $5, $7 yeah. million dollars, right? Yeah. So depending on how well you do performance-wise in your portfolios and who you're working with, those types of things really do come into play when you think about longevity and how this is going to affect your heirs. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. At least currently, and hopefully they will, you know, reestablish that Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but I don't know if they'll probably let this one expire. I mean, the $13.61 million tax exemption is a great one because it allows people, you know, I think it, a lot of people are in that, you know, could be easily in that 1 to 5, 7 million area. And it'd be great to keep that above that on a federal level. But like you said, it expires the end of next year.
That's right.
And what will they do with it? But it could be, you could easily end up with that much and then you have to pay taxes.
I don't see the exemption going up, Tony.
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, it's going to come down. Yeah, I would agree. Now, there are some states don't have any state exemption on estate tax. They don't have that. But
there's only about 13 states today that have some type of an estate tax.
Unfortunately, Oregon is one of them.
Oregon's one of them. So is Minnesota, where you're talking from, clearly. But, you know, yes, it's something that you want to talk to your advisor about, because at $1 million threshold, everybody is subject to that. And so that kind of pushes us into the next part of this conversation that you were bringing up, Tony, which is what type of gifting tax strategy should you be talking with your advisor about to be able to avoid these taxation situations if you want to do it effectively, right?
Right.
And so let me just give our listeners just the first bullet point that they could think through. You know, anybody today can gift up to $18,000 a year, and you can do that to an unlimited amount of people without breaching any kind of gift tax exemption. So that's a pretty substantial amount of money that you could give away without having any issues, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Now, if you exceed that annual exclusion amount, then you just have to file a gift tax return. And your accountant would know that. There's no tax that's owed initially on that. It's just filing with the IRS to let them know that you did it. But it will count against that lifetime maximum that you're able to give away, like we talked about. Okay. So, in some situations, there are other gifting guidelines that you should recognize and look through. For instance, you have unlimited gifting for educational and medical expenses. That's got to be a direct gift, though, today in tax law for that to work. And so lots of things that could come into play here. You know, there's unlimited gifting among spouses. Gifts can be given to qualified charities. There can be lots of ways that you can do that, you know, to be able to make it efficient. And so we can get into a few more gifting strategies if that is something that you think people would be interested in, because we have talked about that on the show before, Tony.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, some people want to gift things to charities, and you have to look at all the tax implications or advantages in some of these cases. So I know that that's why you and your team work alongside tax professionals and estate planning attorneys for your clients, and you quarterback the situation or coach it. You're looking at the big picture, aren't you?
Yeah. And there's, you know, you have to ask the right questions of clients to figure out exactly how you can maybe help them with the gifting strategies. But a couple that we've talked about before and that lots of our clients utilize today, Tony, the first is qualified charitable distributions or QCDs. And this gives everybody the ability to give $105,000, a year away. Now, there are specifics. You have to be 70 and a half. The money goes directly from your IRA to the charity. You can't touch it. But the good thing is it does not increase your actual income. And so you're not the one paying taxes on it. And in some situations, it can be used to satisfy your required minimum distribution. So that is a very useful tool that many people utilize for sure. We've got other clients that utilize other gifting strategies like donor advised funds, where you can receive a tax deduction today, right? And you can select and give give the money to a specific charity later. Okay. And then many people probably have heard of a very specific type of trust, which is called a charitable remainder trust. And in that situation, you receive the tax deduction now. You also receive an income stream now, and you potentially reduce your estate taxes later. All of these are very, very detailed gifting strategies that you should be working with not only your financial advisor, but an attorney on to and your accountant if you're kind of organizing everything correctly, so that when you go into this situation, you know exactly what you're trying to accomplish. You're following the rules that the IRS has created. And more importantly, you're getting things done the way that you want them to be.
Before we go, we covered a lot today, and we'll probably cover some more on this topic in future shows. But how can our listeners get a hold of you if they have questions?
Sure thing. Just pick up the phone and give us a call here locally at 541-500-4321, or go to jonesfinancialtalk.com and request that information from us, please.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you, Nick. And listeners, viewers, that does it for today's episode of Jones Financial Talk with our host, Nick Jones.
Thank you for listening to Jones Financial Talk. Don't pay too much for taxes or retire without a sound income plan. For more information, please contact Nick Jones at Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. Call 541-500-4321 or visit their website at jonesfinancialtalk.com. Fee-based financial planning and investment advisory services are offered by Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions, a registered investment advisor in the state of Oregon. Insurance products and services are offered through Jones & Associates Insurance Solutions. Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions and Jones & Associates Insurance Solutions are affiliated companies.
All matters discussed during the show are for informational purposes only. Each individual situation may vary, and the opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. Materials presented are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representations can be made as to its accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our qualified representatives prior to implementation. We are not affiliated with or enforced by the Social Security Administration, the Federal Medicare Program, or any other government agency. Calling this number will direct you to a licensed sales agent.